here's my hot take. I think we have passed the golden age of dating apps, and I think we are going to see people moving away from them. Because I think we have reached this saturation point where it's like, I think they won't ever go away. I think they're still can be a useful tool. They can be a way to branch out of your social circles and where you would meet people. But just compared to before, where I felt like there was this heyday, like when, you know, Dedeker and I met each other through OkCupid, you know, it was on the upswing and it hit this like saturation point. And then I think this combination of kind of the depersonalization we've all had with each other because of being really isolated during the pandemic and a lot of fear and extra concerns coming up, I think all of these things have combined together that I predict, and I think it's already happening, people are so ready to be in person and to have a connection that's not just looking at information on a screen and not just making decisions based on that, that I think this also might be something that's not as hot as it was. Welcome to the Multiamory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
Whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we are once again answering questions from you, our amazing listeners. If you would like to have one of your questions answered on this show, we post that every month in our private Patreon, Discord, and Facebook groups. So go ahead and join those if you want to get in on these questions. And in today's episode, we got so many amazing questions and we had to narrow it down from there, but we're going to cover a wide range of things from an imbalance of which partner gets more attention at social events, getting over some challenges talking about sex because of a religious background, how to approach dating apps in a way that's healthy and avoid the temptation to just gamify everything there, as well as a little bit of statistics about straight versus queer people in polyamorous and non-monogamous relationships. So we're really covering a broad range. And to top it all off, we are joined by our very special guest, Billy Procida. Billy Procida is a stand-up comedian in New York City, where he runs a monthly naked comedy show. He's been published in Mashable and Marie Claire and has been interviewing his exes for over 9 years now on the Man Whore podcast. And I know the name might sound like kind of a bro show, but it's very much not. And that's one of the things that we love about it. And Billy was on this show several years ago, and we're very excited to have him back. Also, if you are interested in learning more about our fundamental communication tools that we reference over and over again on this show, you can check out our book, Multiamory: Essential Tools for Modern Relationships, which covers some of our most used communication tools for all types of relationships. You can find links to buy it at multiamory.com/book or wherever fine books are sold. Alternatively, you can check out the first 9 episodes of this podcast, where we also go over some of our most widely used and shared and referenced communication tools. And with that, let's get into it. Billy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Well, wow. I love all those natural plugs up front.
Love having our book in the background behind you.
Wait, do y'all have a... Oh my gosh, that's your book.
Oh shit, wow. There it is.
I totally forgot y'all published a book that was just like sitting there. No big deal.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm going to put my money on it's been 7 years since we had you on the show last. Emily, I know you looked up the specific episode. How close did I get?
It was in 2016, so fairly close.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
All right.
But it was, yeah, episode 94. I believe it was pre-Trump. So these were really simple times back then. It was just a very... different landscape, very different world that we all were living in. Yeah. And now here we are, a little older, a little wiser, perhaps. I don't know, something
Gosh,
like
I hope
that.
So.
Yeah. I was wondering if Billy was still in like the days of the double digits of our episodes.
Like how I don't even remember those times very well, but we had you on to talk about group sex. And now You know, is that something that you're still doing? Are you still engaging in such a thing?
Yeah, can you still talk to us about group sex?
Yeah, I'm still doing the group sex. It's just remarkable that that seems to be what I'm known for or something. That, because, you know, when people think orgies, they think this face, clearly. I still partake in some play parties from time to time. I feel like I need to go on a little break for a moment. Sometimes you can get a little like orgied out. But
I bet,
Still having a good time.
Yeah, I personally have never been orgied out. I've also gone to very few, so that's not been my experience.
I don't think I could get orgied out, but I mean, I'm an introvert, so I think for me it's more about the like being peopled out or stimulationed out or interactioned out rather than the orgy piece of it specifically.
Well, you never want the concept of an orgy or a sex party to like get stale. Like, you never want to be like, yep, there's Jay and her tits out again, as usual, right? It's like, you don't want to be like, oh, just another day at the office. So sometimes I have to go on a break to, like, keep the luster and, you know, fun of it.
Right, I go to these play parties and I just end up hanging out with the cat in the corner because that's my one bit of joy. I'm just so bored with all of it.
If there was a cat at Hacienda, there would be someone who just hangs out with the cat in the corner, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure.
Be someone who's there only for the cat.
Well, the community I go to, they've started having in the post-core more parties. It used to be like, oh, once or twice a month. If you missed one month, oh, it's a whole nother month and change. Now it's like every week there's several parties.
Wow.
And
wow.
So you got to, everyone's like, are you going to the party on Thursday? I'm like, I was just at three parties.
Wow.
That's incredible. Wow. I'm shocked that they have so many now, especially in like a post-COVID world.
Well, that must be part of it. People are, sure. Like, that's what I've noticed. People are like desperate for in-person anything.
That's
right?
True.
And some people still feel nervous about that. But a lot of people are just like, please, for the love of God, let me interact with a human face-to-face. And if that can be also sexually with 20 of them, even better.
Yeah, they're coming up with all sorts of like themes and everything. And I don't know, I can barely come up with one outfit per month. It's really difficult when I got to start getting fashionably creative multiple times a month. I'm not built for it.
I didn't even think about the fashion part. Gosh.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like, which color jock strap is it this week? I can't.
So you're one of the few podcasts that actually existed before us. And that's also pretty awesome.
Of all podcasts ever.
No, I know. I just mean like in kind of our sphere, in the realm of...
I mean, statistically speaking, that is actually even true. Like the number of podcasts that still exist that existed before us is actually a very low percentage of the total number of podcasts
that exist
because of that explosion. Like it ramped up a lot after the time that we both started our podcasts in like 2013, 2014. But then in 2020, it like blew up, like the number of podcasts just shot through the roof. So yeah, I mean, statistically, that is even true.
There are also a lot of podcasts named Sex with First Name of the Host that have pod faded since. I feel like there's
right.
A lot of those.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, so speaking of, you are about to celebrate your 500th episode. And we'll talk a little bit more about what you're going to be doing to celebrate that. But I want to hear from you first how you have seen the landscape change in podcasting, in covering sex in particular, maybe even in comedy as well. Just curious about a little retrospective.
Well, in podcasting, what's really cool is that, and Jace is a studies nerd as well, so I know you know this, like more people know what a podcast is than when we started. More people have listened to a podcast since we started, and more people are listening to more podcasts, which is cool. I like to think that most people have never heard of my show, which means that there's a ton of people who could still kind of discover my podcast, your podcast, right? So I think that's really cool. Podcasts are like showing up in media. We're starting to have like characters in TV and movies who like, they do a podcast. Like we're the new blogger.
Right.
Which
right.
Yeah. Is like,
I don't know how I feel about that comparison.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't know. I feel, well, like, you know, because Carrie, I don't watch, but she was a blogger. Isn't she a podcaster now?
Oh, in the new Sex in the City.
Yeah.
Oh.
She wrote a column in a newspaper. So that's okay. Like
even
really
older.
Old. Maybe that was pre-blogger. And now that it went to blogger. So she skipped kind of a generation and just automatically became a podcaster.
Funny.
Love that.
In the sex podcasting space, I think it's really cool that we're just seeing a ton of shows from a ton of different perspectives. That's pretty cool. You get a lot of variations of like whether it's identities or interests or relationship styles. A lot more people are starting to, even like a typical relationship show is like they're wising up to non-monogamy, even if they call it modern relationships. They are starting to understand like this isn't going anywhere. This idea of like having a customizable relationship is that's the future. People are embracing choice. And so I think that we're seeing that reflected in a lot of podcasts in our space. Sadly, in the comedy podcast land, it's a whole mess. There's a lot of great comedy, a lot of great podcasts and happening. And then there's a lot of people just pretending that we can't say anything anymore.
Sure.
As I'm saying it right now.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. They're like, I've noticed that's a recurring theme. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't really relate with that. But then again, you know, I'm actually right now listening as a admin task slash project. I am listening to the intros of all my episodes as I'm going back and redoing chapter marks for dynamic ad insertion, right?
Wow.
So I was like, I'm re-listening all the monologues and then any of them that need to be trimmed down, which many of them do. early criticism was very long intros. So I'm just cutting out a lot of fluff, but I'm also now hearing like my evolution of my thoughts on things. So
Yeah,
I had a similar take of like what you can and can't say. And I don't feel as much that way today. But it's interesting to kind of like hear where I thought I was 24, 25, 26 versus now at the age of 34. You know, podcasting is changing. Our collective views on sex and dating are changing. And I might even be changing. Who knows?
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, at least the group sex thing has still stayed consistent. I did want to comment about, that whole thing about, like you can't say this or you can't say that, that... Like, I think that really just the list of what it is, just that just changes, right? I don't know if the volume necessarily changes. If you think about several decades ago, the things that we could or couldn't say in polite society that we can say now, right? Like maybe things about our Lord Jesus Christ that we wouldn't say back then that many of us are quite free to say now. And it's going to be the same thing, that there's things that we can and are saying now that in a few decades is going to be completely forbidden, right? Or considered taboo. So I do think that it just kind of shifts.
Yeah. And stand-up comedy has always shifted with that. I mean, it's always, Eddie Murphy even today says like, some of the bits in Delirious I couldn't do today, or I'd have to change the language. And he wasn't complaining about it. That's just like the observation of the times. And even then, it's like, there really aren't many, I don't even know if there are plural words you can't say on a stage as a stand-up comedian. And that's I do consider that a bit of a sacred space. It's different from when, like, quote unquote, what we, the collective we, can say. Comics can still say most things, just depends on, like, what are you saying? Why are you saying it? From what perspective are you saying it? You really can say anything. And as usual, as there always has been, there might be social backlash to it. Lenny Bruce couldn't say everything. He got arrested multiple times on a stage for saying things by the state. A lot of people just like want to cry that like they're getting yelled at on the internet. And like, that's sure. Not new. Public criticism has always been around. And that's even a lesson I've had to learn. So yeah, everyone can grow up about it.
Yeah, great point. We're going to get into these questions. Do you want to tell us though, real quick, what's coming up for your 500th episode?
Okay. I actually recorded this, I think, almost 2 months ago now, but I was like, I should hold it for 500. Many years ago, I think it's episode 180 of my show, I did something we called the oral sex auditions. A friend of mine was complaining that she like couldn't get guys to go down on her, or like they would brag about how good they are at oral and then they would like suck at it. And she was just complaining about finding quality sex in this city. So I said, let's hold auditions. Because I come from sports land. Like, why not? Let's hold auditions. We'll hold tryouts. And so I arranged 5 different men to come over to her place. And I would do pre-game, post-game interviews. But they had 12 minutes in the room with my friend to make a first impression. Penis stays in the pants. Those were the rules. And after each guy left, they come out sweaty like LeBron. I stick a mic in their face. They leave. Then she came on, tell us how it really went. Obviously, the dude who bragged about being a sex god was not, as usual.
Yeah. Why is that?
I was wondering if there was a clear winner.
Yeah, was there a clear winner? Was there a clear takeaway? Did anyone learn any life lessons?
I'm sure.
I don't know. I don't know about life lessons. There was a clear winner, but and he was my ringer. See, I want to make sure that she had at least one competent mouth involved in this experiment. So
were you taking bets behind the scenes? Was that like...
Well, I like asked around the community, so to speak. I asked like my sluttiest friends in town in the group sex scene. I was just like, hey, who's just an absolute, you know, he comes over, he gets it done. And they gave me like the same name. So
Wow.
And it was my ringer.
There you go.
Yeah, he did great. His name's Porno Jim.
Okay.
Great. Not the guy you expect to be so talented. And yet.
Anyways,
so it ends up being like this episode, like talking about female pleasure and maybe making fun of a couple guys. And so now what we did, I decided to do like a sequel to it, so to speak. And for my 500th episode, I went down on five different women in a recording day. And that same friend, Roxanne, she comes on as the guest host and she interviews them before and after. And then like, you know, when these women left my place, she'd be like, and how do you think you did? And I'd just shrug and hope and cross my fingers and look up and So that was pretty fun. I actually have not edited it yet. So I still do not know what these women said after.
Oh wow.
Because all three of you.
How could you not instant? Like, that's the first thing I think I would do is like listen and hear what my feedback was.
Well, and I want to know if they all like had different experiences with you. Like, did you use the same technique on everyone?
And did you get tips from Porno Jim ahead of time?
Yes. Did they just have like wildly different feedback? Like, I'd be really fascinated to hear that.
These are also questions I have.
well, you'll find out.
So everyone will find out in August when that episode comes out. But for now, like, I also do not know. I know, like, one, like, I have my suspicions. Like, there's a few who will just say I have, like, physical, messy confirmation I did okay. There's one who I just know, I didn't get it. It was a long 12-minute audition. It was a lot of going to throw everything we have out here. We're just getting, I'm getting thrown into bed with a stranger, like, you know, doing our best. And, you know, so, and like, I've been seeing one of them for a couple months since we did that. So, can't wait to find
apparently
out.
Apparently she enjoyed it. Hopefully.
We'll see. Yeah. I mean, I'm most interested in the one who did not enjoy.
Of course.
Because like, that's going to be hopefully has the funniest lines in it. Anytime you can insult a man sexually in bed, I think there's so much opportunity for fun. So I'm excited about it.
Awesome. Let's get into this.
Yeah, let's get into this. I would love to ask 6 million more questions, but I guess we're all going to have to listen to your 500th episode to find out what happens.
By the way, y'all like introduced like, oh, like something like, you know, we got you the sex questions because you're the sex guy. And I'm like, I'm trying to like shift myself so I'm also a relationships love person, but then I tell that story and I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Okay, I get it. I get the perception.
You'll get a little column A, a little column B with these questions, thankfully. Yeah. So we do have to give our initial disclaimer that we as a trio and Billy as well have spent a lot of time studying healthy relationship communication. But all of us are not mind readers. Our advice is based on, you know, our own experience and also the information that we have coming from each of these questions that were given to us. And every situation is super unique. So we encourage all of you out there to use your own judgment, seek professional help if needed. Just take, you know, what you like from this episode and then leave the rest. And you are your only true expert on your own life, and your feelings and your decisions are your own. So with that, let's get into these questions today.
Okay, question number one. My spouse and I attend a lifestyle club. I get a ton of attention and they don't. And this is in parentheses. They also present as mask. People come up to me all the time, compliment me, engage in conversation with us as a couple. But the minute I leave a group to grab a drink or use the bathroom or say hi to a friend, people typically lose interest in talking to my spouse. And when they do come up to them randomly, it's to tell them, your wife is so hot. This hurts because they're a good person who is interesting on their own, and they're a kind and attentive dom, but they're also extremely insecure. How might I navigate this environment differently to better support them?
Can I just ask a clarifying question? Please explain to me what a lifestyle club is exactly, just for all the lay people out there and me.
Yeah, lifestyle just means swingers.
I got it.
Probably
okay,
some people are offended by my answer, but that's really what it means.
Okay. Okay. It is that. Because when you say like sex club, I was like, is that different than a lifestyle club? Maybe functionally it is in some ways.
I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, people use and misuse language however they want. But like if I hear lifestyle club, I'm thinking swingers. I'm thinking couple centric. If I hear play party, I'm thinking a little more egalitarian, a little more queer friendly, a little bit more poly people.
Right. Yeah. I think when I hear lifestyle or swingers, I think probably pretty hetero presenting couple centric.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, cool. That a problem still out there in like the lifestyle scene. If you ask like the younger guard, the newer guard of swinging, I just interviewed a bunch of swinger influencers for an article for Mashable about like getting into swinging. And yeah, I mean, one, queerness, depending on the club and the population at that club, is going to get taken either way. I don't know how this person, this partner, like presents. You know, you said mask, but sometimes there's a streak and some long hair or a side shave that gives you like a little hints or clues. And so depending on that, like you might get people who are avoiding for those reasons. Sadly, there's still this like the reason I have an aversion to the swinger lifestyle is like it's still as progressive as you are about it. So I don't know. My heart breaks for the partner in this situation because like that's my fear. I don't want to be like the ugly one, but this doesn't even have to do with being ugly. This just has to do with like people going like, oh, this is the one we want to talk up. This is who we flirt with. And yeah, I guess we can rope this person in too.
Right. Like the woman is the target of affections, attraction, interest, and bonus points if the guy or the mask also happens to be attractive and someone that we're willing to tolerate inviting to play with us. Yeah.
This listener is not the only person with this struggle for sure. I mean, this is a very common thing in that world, in that lifestyle.
So they mentioned that they attend a lifestyle club, and it sounds like it's just this one particular one, but you were kind of implying, Billy, that it can really vary depending on the venue or maybe on the event or something that's happening there.
Yeah. Or the region, like depending where you swing. I imagine a lifestyle club in some parts of the country are going to be different and, for example, treat like maybe queerness or progressivism differently than in a lifestyle club in the Northeast, for example, you know?
Yeah.
So that can play a role. Sometimes lifestyle clubs are going to have themed nights. So like there might be a theme that goes one way or another. Again, just also where you are, maybe like it trends older or younger. You just kind of find your space. And, you know, if you don't, if you have options where you are, the first thing I would think of is like, don't go to this club. If you have other options, if that's like the only game in town, that's the only game in town. But if there's like a kink community that does munches, or if there's like a poly scene where you might find something that they're calling play parties, you know, that would be the code word I would think more to. You know, try to go to those, try to go to other events. If these places are filled with a bunch of like, I don't even know what to call them without using a lot of expletives. I'm careful with my language on this show. Of all podcasts I do, I'm like, I gotta behave. I gotta behave, Multi.
You can swear and go nuts.
Yeah, you can swear. It's okay. The first thing it made me think of is, yeah, I know for myself personally, the group sex spaces or play spaces or kink spaces that I've enjoyed the most have been spaces where there is a little bit more of that community vibe. It feels okay to make friends. It feels okay to be interacting with people, even if it's not necessarily sexual or like cruising or flirting. And that's not to say that if that isn't present in a space that's wrong. But I do know, like, I have been in certain swinger spaces where the idea of, oh, like, I'm going to be friendly and treat like a human being, even though I don't have an intention of trying to fuck you later, is just not really on the agenda. Or even the idea of, I'm going to talk to someone's partner when they're by themselves, not with their other half, quote unquote, like that in some spaces, in some kind of microcultures, that's also considered like to be rude or not safe to do. So yeah, so it sounds like, Billy, what you're saying is this could be like a microculture thing of a particular club, right? And that, yeah, sometimes it takes a while to stretch out and experiment and dip into different communities and kind of see what might be the best fit. I'm wondering though, if it is the case that this is just how it is, or it's, I don't know, it's like, yeah, we showed up to this one club this night and this was kind of the vibe. This is what was happening. I am wondering about how to answer that question of how to offer support, you know, if this is happening.
I mean, clearly, in, like, talk up your, be your partner's hype woman, I think was the gender of the person involved in this question. If a couple is talking to you and the other guy is leading that conversation and trying to break through, like, introduce your partner as like, oh my God, he's a really great and attentive dom. And then tell a fun story about a DS scene you recently did and highlight their qualities that like made them such a good dom for you. And maybe that'll perk up the ears of the like other partner of this couple. And maybe that'll get some crosstalk going there. Maybe the guy who's like so zeroed in on you, like hears you share some of those things. And now it gives him something to talk to your partner about, but maybe be a bit of your partner's hype woman. I don't know how social or comfortable chatting up they are, but that would be my first thought. And honestly, when I'm uncomfortable, when I've been like so clearly socially uncomfortable at a party, that's what I've had dates do for me. And we didn't even really talk about it. They would like hype me up with other people and introduce me. And yeah, I think that would be the move if this is where you got to be.
Yeah, it sounds like from this, they said that their partner is also extremely insecure. And so I think that's probably part of it. And as someone who tends to be more introverted or especially uncomfortable in new situations or around new people, like it takes me a while to kind of get comfortable and warm up to that. I can relate to that. And I know for some people that's even more difficult. I love that idea of not only like talking them up, but also if possible, and maybe this is hard if you don't know these people well, but if possible to kind of introduce something that does start conversation. Mm-hmm. Like I remember if we take this kind of more general, right? So take away the lifestyle part of it, that a piece of advice that I've heard before in terms of introducing people to each other at parties or social events or networking events or whatever, is that rather than the kind of, hey, this is so-and-so, they do X, this is so-and-so, they do Y, meet each other. Instead, it's this is so-and-so, they were so awesome and helped me move all my stuff when I moved into my new apartment. Like, I really appreciate them for that. Like, tell some kind of other story or like, hey, this is so-and-so, they are super into World of Warcraft and I know you are too, or whatever it is. Like, if you know something in common or if you know some little interesting story rather than just kind of the facts of they're great, but it's like, here's a specific story. Here's a specific interesting thing can just help them then have something to start a conversation from, at least to give them a chance at that, right? Okay, shall we move on to the next one here?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
So this question was extremely long, so I have paraphrased this down, but if you have any clarifying questions, I have the whole text here, so we can go check that out. So basically, this person is saying that they recently left a very religious background and that, you know, in that background, sex was taboo, and their only real education about that was having access to the internet and like talking to some friends. But it wasn't really a thing that was talked about openly, and so they had a lot of shame and guilt about sex. And now their partner just left a long-term relationship, also was from that lifestyle, very religious, a lot of shame and guilt about talking about sex. And they're both in their early to mid-20s, trying to discover what they like sexually, but both of their past experiences are making that challenging to talk about openly and to experiment with. They've had talks about consent and feel like they have a good foundation with each other, but they're still struggling to be comfortable discussing sex and exploring their sensuality together.
So immediately this reminded me of some of the things that the two of you do on the Paired app, which is an external way to answer questions and get yourself like thinking about something that might be interesting to you in your relationship or past, you know, things that you've done with yourself or with each other or whatever. So to find, to me, like some sort of external way to write down or to answer questions on an app or, you know, look at flashcards or something, like something to get the ball rolling in terms of even going there and even talking about it. Because I think if you don't have a lot of practice knowing about yourself sexually or even like where to start, it's great to have somebody else do that for you. And, you know, I know Sex with Emily just came out with a book and maybe she has some cool stuff for Emily Nagoski. So, yeah, some sort of external thing I think might feel a little bit easier and better than just like, oh, shit, I've got to rack my brain to try to come up with something that I really don't know anything about.
I heard a story from a couple. It sounds actually relatively similar. I don't know if they had a religious background or if it was just maybe a more sexually repressed background. But for them, it was listening to My Dad Wrote a Porno together, which is like kind of is a different take from listening to Sex with Emily or reading Dr. Emily Nagoski's book, but like something extremely silly and very hypersexual and even pretty gross, in my opinion, in some scenarios, like going to this silly extreme that helps to make it less taboo and maybe less scary.
Yeah.
Right. Because the way that I see it, it's like anything you express after that is probably going to be feel more tame, right? After listening to that show.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was thinking is like listening to sex podcasts and then talking about it because instead of jumping straight into like our sex stuff and what we want, how about let's just get comfortable saying some of these words. Oh my gosh, did you hear that episode where they talked about doing rim jobs in at the beach? And then whatever, you know,
sure.
I can't relate, but you know, but now you're saying these sexual words that maybe you've been a little less comfortable speaking out of your mouth hole. And then you just get a comfort in saying them. And then maybe you'll be willing to say them in relation to something you want to each other. That's what I would think is like listening to sex and dating podcasts and then just like talking about an episode or listening together, you know, something like that.
Yeah. I think that's a super fun idea to just become more comfortable before even dealing with like, what do we like? Mm-hmm. That's super cool. There's also a few websites that are another way to get kind of this external stuff. So one that I think we talked about like years and years ago on this show is called Mojo Upgrade. And it's a site where you and your partner both answer questions on a little questionnaire that's like an example of something like, here, let me pull it up, like have my partner talk dirtier to me. And you kind of say like, nah, if they want to, or yeah, I would love that. And you go through all these and then it gives you your results at the end, just showing you the stuff that you agreed on. If either person said no, it just doesn't show up in your results. There's another one called Carnal Calibration, same idea.
Ew.
And then there's another one called Sectionaire, like a questionnaire, but with sex. I don't think they thought that title through very well, but the same idea, right? Where you both fill out your answers to this to just get a sense of like, where might we start, right? Kind of that, maybe we both answered, I don't know if my partner's into it, then maybe you try it a little bit or talk about it more or look up a podcast episode about it or something like that.
So we had somebody comment on the previous question and the text of that is what I'm about to read now. And it sort of relates to what we just talked about there. This person says, this resonates with me so much. I started my religious deconstruction journey several years ago. About a year ago, my partner of 4 years told me he is polyamorous. We started opening our relationship, but it's been a struggle for me to process the idea of him being sexually intimate with someone else. He came from a long-term relationship where his needs were ignored and at times harshly judged. The logical, everyday side of myself fully loves and supports him for being true to himself and exploring the wants and needs he wasn't able to do for so long. As I've been processing where this dissonance is coming from, in part with my therapist, I'm realizing a big portion comes from the same shame around sex from my religious upbringing. It's compounded by my history as a sexual assault survivor. He's been supportive of me through this process as well, but I feel like I've hit a wall of sorts with ways to move past it. I would love to hear your thoughts or any advice you have for ways to navigate this while still supporting my partner.
Yeah, so this is sort of a little bit of a similar flavor to the previous question, you know, having a religious upbringing, going through religious deconstruction, and then that difficult push-pull that many people go through of, you know, when I feel aversion to something, is that truly me? Is that just the product of how I was socialized? is it okay if that matches how I was socialized, or do I want to distance myself from how I was socialized? In this process of deconstructing and like really trying to understand who you actually are and what you actually want and what your worldview actually is, these things can be really sticky. And I think this can be sticky even for people who didn't necessarily have a religious upbringing. Something that I find myself saying to clients a lot is that sometimes if a situation, the phrase I use is, if a situation like rhymes enough with a similar situation, it can make us uncomfortable. The example of this is sometimes if I'm working with a client who's a woman who's very pro non-monogamy, maybe she was even the one who inspired the idea, maybe she's even very happily dating, but then there's something about being home alone while her male partner is out on a date with another woman where it like, it rhymes enough with this kind of cultural archetype of, oh, the woman who's left behind at home, right? While her man is running around on her, right? Or sometimes being the quote unquote other woman, the homewrecker, even if everyone's above board and everyone's consenting, there's still these images, these social mores that we've received that even when logically and cognitively we're 100% on board, there can still be something that's a little bit more seeped into our bones that can make this feel uncomfortable. So I guess that'd be the first thing for me, is just kind of validating that sense of discomfort that maybe feels dissonant from the way that you want to feel or the way that you think that, you know, I mean, if you're raised religiously for like 20, 30 years, that stuff doesn't get rewritten overnight.
I was just going to jump in quickly with, I don't know how this person is trying to think about this or, you know, what kind of thoughts come up for them. But I just wanted to throw out there that not everybody, even who does this for a long time and is very comfortable with it, loves thinking about their partner having sex with other people, yeah. Right? Like some people love that, right? Some people it's like, oh yeah, that's so hot knowing my partner is having sex with someone else. I want to hear about it as much as I can. This turns me on. I really like it. I'd like pictures if I could get them. Like there's some people that feel that way. I'm not one of them. I generally prefer to not think about it. And so I guess I just wanted to throw that out there just to be sure you're not trying to get yourself to feel a certain way that just isn't how you're going to feel, and rather a sense of like, yeah, I'm comfortable with knowing intellectually that they're doing that, but I don't have to be thinking about it or like being excited about it exactly. It's like, yeah, I want them to be happy. And they even said here, like logically, I'm like, yeah, I'm happy for them to be exploring that. So I just wanted to throw that out there in case you're trying to hold yourself to like, I want to be someone who gets off on this, and you don't need to be perfectly happy and comfortable in non-monogamy.
Yeah, to piggyback right off of that, it's like we can throw suggestions and strategies of how to get your mind off that, like during a partner's date night, right? Like there's things we can say, like, make sure you schedule something for yourself, have an activity, get your, what, you know, make sure maybe you go have a date, make sure hang out with, make it a girls' night, go have fun with your friends, something. But at a point, if like even doing those things several dates in a row and you still can't stop thinking about it, you know, then there's also the possibility that like maybe that relationship style isn't for you, or maybe the frequency needs to be adjusted. But there's all sorts of ways to get your mind off of it. It's the ways you get your mind off of a lot of things. You know, schedule activities for yourself. You get really into work, you know, have a solo date night, and you get the tub and the rose petals and the candles and a good book and a glass of wine, maybe, right? Or a joint, depending where you're at. And but again, like, it's also okay if it ends up not being for you in the first place.
Yeah. I think that's huge right there, that so often we really do want to fit ourselves into a box or take ourselves out of one box and put ourselves into another one. And sometimes it's just not quite the right fit. And that's also totally okay, what you both said. So there are varying levels of that. It could just be, hey, I just want to more practice like parallel polyamory, where I'm not really somebody who, you know, gets very intimate or knows my metamour very well, or has to think about them having sex together or whatever. But I'm okay with the concept of polyamory and I enjoy engaging in it as well. Or it may just be, maybe this isn't the right thing for me at this time in my life. And we've said that a lot on this show too, that we go through various stages where non-monogamy may be more of a thing that you want to do, or it may be less of a thing that you want to do at certain times in your life. And that's totally okay.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the reason I want to make sure that got brought up was because, like, in her text, like, it doesn't ever say, like, I'm curious about this, or I want, like, I was just seeing, like, the desire to do the relationship model came from, like, wanting to support and let him, like, be true to himself. And, like, you know, relationships are a compromise. Like, maybe it's not a free for all, or maybe there's, like, a certain frequency of dates that he can go on, or maybe it's just not for you. But, like, I never saw, like, a desire expressed in, like, in the email. So
that's a great point. Yeah.
That it
was just that the partner told the question asker, I actually don't know if they mentioned their own gender here, but yeah, that the partner was the one saying, I'm polyamorous and they're doing it. And the question asker wants to be supportive, but yeah, you're right. There wasn't any like, and I also am excited about this and into it. So yeah, that is also something worth thinking about. And I hope that it does work out for them and that they do find a way to be comfortable with it and happy with it. But I just want to be clear, you don't have to be like gung-ho stoked about your partner having sex with someone else. Like, if you can just feel even neutral about it, that's great. Like, that's cool right there. So we have a few more questions, but before we get to those, we want to take a quick break to talk about some ways that you can support this show. If this is content that you appreciate and that you're benefiting from, and if you'd like to become one of the people who gets their question answered on the show, take a moment to check out our ads and to join our Patreon community. And that's where we post our request for question submissions each month so that we can do these Q&A episodes. But either way, if you can take a moment to listen to them, it really does help support our show and allows us to keep this information coming to everyone out there each week for free. For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
Okay, let's dive into this next question. I recently went through a breakup via veto. My partner is married and his spouse no longer wants to be poly. I'm hesitant to date anyone who is already partnered because I'm afraid of that happening again. The whole situation has made me put a freeze on dating anyone at all. Any advice on thawing me out? And I wish they had like a sassy sign off, like Crimson in Fresno.
Right.
Yikes! Yeah, veto power, boy. It's a tough one. It really is, and definitely being broken up with because somebody's going back to monogamy. I mean, that's a really challenging thing to go through. I think if on dating apps you see that somebody has had a established multi-person relationship for a number of years, then probably, hopefully, they may not be a person that wants to like automatically just blow their relationships apart and go back to monogamy. But I think that it does happen in situations, even with people that you don't expect it to. But I'd say a lot of communication early on in a relationship about what kind of polyamory do you practice? Is veto power even a thing? Are you coming from a relationship structure where you opened up and there's the possibility of it closing again? All of those types of questions I think are really important to ask kind of right off the bat. Clearly, if somebody's already partnered, not all of them are going to automatically just want to close back up and become monogamous again. But it does happen. And yes, it can be really shitty when it does.
Yeah, this doesn't have to do with necessarily even a veto. Like what I'm seeing here isn't like, oh, I didn't enjoy the experience of dating someone with a partner. It was, oh, this bad outcome happened. And so, well, if I remove the whole dating people with I'll prevent all the bad things. But that's, you know, that's never how the world works. It's just going to, the next breakup will be some other factor. Oh, they travel too much for work, or they're a comedian, or they're not a comedian, right? Fixing any one of these things does fix the dating, you know, the issue. That was just what happened in that situation. It was really unfortunate. It's sad. Hearts break. And then we pick it back up and we go back into it. You might be missing out on like a really awesome relationship because all of a sudden you're just going to like get rid of anyone with a partner. And like, again, unless you didn't enjoy the experience of being with someone with a partner, keep at it. Don't like check them off right away. Otherwise you're just going to keep ponging between like filters put up.
Yeah. And it's sort of a weird balance, right? Like, of course, when we're dating, and I think this goes beyond whether you're monogamous, non-monogamous or whatever, of course, we can start to hone some of those filters in the sense of what do I know about myself as far as what I'm looking for in a relationship? What do I know about myself as far as the type of people that I have chemistry with? What are the red flags that I've started to identify based on my lived experience? So, of course, like we can hone our ability to pick partners, but that only goes so far in actually insulating us from heartbreak and pain, which is impossible if you're going to be in a relationship with human beings.
So this next question, I feel like, is really geared, and I'm really interested to hear what the two gentlemen of the group have to say about it. It's kind of geared towards y'all. So here we go. As the current dating landscape is increasingly mediated by dating apps, this technology treats men specifically as a twofold problem. It uses the relative overrepresentation of men compared to women in the user base to sell women the filtering tools that come with premium subscriptions, and then sells men tools to make their profiles stand out and appear more attractive past these filters in a weird arms race. This further gamifies the system and incentivizes men particularly, but all users as well, to think of this in terms of investment and strategy to maximize returns. Cast a wide net, devalue each individual interaction, approach each date as some kind of audition, and be superficial in making connections or judging people. This affects how people behave, not just online, but also in person. So, how do we navigate such a dating landscape? How can we as men avoid internalizing some of the more pernicious and harmful dimensions of this dating culture and go about meeting people with authenticity and care? In other words, how do we not play this game, especially not on these terms?
Amazing use of the word pernicious just tossed in there.
Yeah.
Put that in your dating profile. Be like, I use the word pernicious, no big deal. Wow. I mean, Jace, do you want to start or should I rant?
Go for it. Go rant.
This is like, I want to tell this guy to take a deep breath and relax. When he's describing all these problems going on externally, like, well, okay, what do I do? I thought at first of the Serenity Prayer. And if not familiar with like religious, it's just, but it does say the word Lord in it. Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And so like you're describing all this stuff going on as if it's like messing with your game, but honestly, just do you, boo boo. Like all you can control is yourself. All you can do is just like be authentic and be yourself. And if people don't want to be authentic, I hope you're not attracted to that. And then that just helps filter things through. And eventually you and another authentic person are going to authentically connect and be like, wow, look at all these fake weirdos. And you're like, yeah. And now look at that. You connected on authenticity. I don't love games. I hate the games. I, as a professional comedian, can't really afford to play all the games. So I just don't. I just be myself. And, you know, I let that go where it's going to go. The dating market becoming a market had like done this whole weird gendered thing. And, you know, with men, it's like you keep pushing yourself up. It kind of goes back to the swinger thing we were talking about, where like in the heteronormative dating culture scene, like, well, women are seen as this like object, right?
win or prove yourself worthy of or whatever, but just like be decent, put your best foot forward, well-lit photos. Jesus Christ, everybody, well-lit photos. What do you, lift your light. You hold the phone up, you turn around in a circle till your eyes look good, and then you hit enter. Just like, yeah, do the best you can, be yourself, worry about all the BS around it because you can't avoid it. Capitalism will corrupt everything. Don't let it corrupt you, dude.
Okay, so before Jace jumps in with his two cents on this, I think that's interesting because, yeah, you know, sometimes I've had a lot of male friends, especially like straight male friends or clients who share these complaints, right? Of it is all feels like this huge machine that I'm like completely powerless to do anything about and completely at the mercy of, and dating just like sucks. And I don't know, like often I feel inclined to want to give a similar strain of advice, right? Of like, yes, it sucks. It sucks for everybody. Trust me, even people on the other side of it, you know, take care of yourself and preserve your energy and show up and be yourself. But I feel like I can't say that because I feel like every dude is like, oh, would you, you know? And so it's interesting. I guess I find it validating that that's your take on it, Billy.
Yeah, I've heard this discourse going around on a lot of podcasts that I listen to as well, that like the top, I guess like 90% of women are only dating the top 10% of men or something.
What does that mean? And where are those numbers coming from?
I know.
From?
I agree with you. I don't know where those numbers are coming from, but basically it's perpetuating this idea that like men out there just don't have any women to date, basically, or that there's the women
her own face off right
no,
now.
No, I know. I'm sorry, but the women out there only are dating like the top 10% of men, whatever the hell that means. So
okay,
everyone else is left in the dust.
Okay,
and I agree.
Sorry,
that's a really shitty thing to hear as a dude. I'm assuming it that must blow. So just throwing all of that out there, it's like, well, yeah, I get the want to be like pissed and to want to do something about it or want to go out and rant about it for sure. Go, Dedeker.
Okay, okay, fine. All right. I'm gonna regulate a little bit.
Okay, you can
I'm
gonna
do regulate
it.
A little bit. So here's the deal is that it's so funny. So I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent, but there's something that I started to notice whenever I was being interviewed on other people's shows. Usually, this would only happen on shows that were slightly more mainstream, so not necessarily shows about sex or weird relationships or things like that. And what I've often noticed being interviewed by guys in particular, when guys are trying to wrap their head around the whole polyamory thing, there is this fear, this phobia that has been repeated to me multiple times by these men. That, oh, but if everyone could just date whoever and everyone could have multiple partners, all of the women would just pick out the hottest guy and they would all just date the hottest guy. Like, we can't let polyamory be okay because that's what's going to happen. All of the women are just going to date the five hottest guys. And I'm just like,
and
where
those
is
men
this
are the only
from?
Ones who
right?
will
like,
ever
where,
date.
Like, that's I don't know where weird. This comes from. I do not know where this narrative comes from, but like, more than one man has expressed this phobia, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, and what, like, where does this come from? And so for me, that statement of, oh yeah, like 90% of women are dating the top 10% of men, I'm like, that's just that same phobia.
Sure.
Being pulled out of somebody's ass and they're putting arbitrary numbers on it. So this could be a whole other episode or maybe just a whole other solo 2-hour rant on my case. I don't know. I don't know where that comes from.
So yes. Okay. So in looking into this, that particular question about the 80% of women dating the 20% of the top guys, or sometimes it's 90 and 10, sometimes it's 95 and 5.
Jesus.
There's a lot of different numbers floating around, which is one clue that it's based on nothing. And then two is that it sounds like this person was just reading a lot of Tim Ferriss and got really obsessed with the whole like 80-20 rule, and they're like, oh, this applies everywhere in life. Look, here it is. And then same with all that phobia that Dedeker was talking about. So like, yeah, it's a whole lot of nonsense. It's not based in anything. This is, from what I can tell, is based slightly on some post from OkCupid from back in like 2014 when they posted some statistics about something. But like, what people are missing is, one, they're not even interpreting the data right. Two, what it actually is more about the amount of messages from men going to like a smaller percentage of women. So it almost kind of makes the opposite argument of like a smaller percentage of women are receiving most of the messages from men and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just like people took out what they want. And as I saw on the 2X chromosomes subreddit, someone said, incel's gonna incel. What can you do?
I mean, for sure. I think that's kind of part of that, though. It's definitely like feeding into that narrative and causing people who are incels to get more angry and upset about things that they think that they can't control.
Yeah, well, if you have some excuse to blame a struggle you have on someone else or just life or whatever and be like, conspiracy. Oh, this is so unfair that I'm suffering so unnecessarily, like, I guess that's tempting to take. I mean, it sucks. Yeah. It's not going to get you very far.
Yeah, it does. Also doesn't require you to change anything about yourself because everything's happening to you. There's nothing for me to do better. I'm a great guy. Just no one knows how great of a fucking guy I am. I was thinking of this also when we were hearing the question. And if I had to give a tip, it's just seeing how much this guy's clearly thinking about the dynamics and the quote unquote game of this all. Was like, I wanted to say, don't let yourself get angry and obsessed and resentful of like some system none of us controls that isn't even the system you think it is. You know, it's they go, what? Well, all these women are getting most of the messages from men. Yeah, because a lot of men are being real freaking thirsty playing a numbers game. That's how it's going to be. But if you personally do quality control, don't be one of those dudes upset that you just 100 copies messages and only got back one response. Like, be authentic maybe and have, I don't know. Look, I just, man, Dedeker, next time we get a drink, we can have a 2-hour rant.
No, I would love to. That'll be a bonus episode. I would love that.
It's just so frustrating to see the resentment because inherently it's thinking, well, obviously I should have dates. And it's, how about we start with, should you? Are you doing a decent version of yourself? Can parts of yourself be better? Not that anyone's perfect, but like, you know, if you're not getting a lot of matches, like, have we looked at the profile? If the profile is set up as best as this human can be, are there other things we can work on? Maybe let me sit down with your messages. I can like point out a lot of things that a lot of women complain to me about guys like you doing. I don't know. It's, so there's, in all of this, I see a lot of resentment from the manosphere. Like that the system's unfair. And I never see the ability of looking at yourself to first think, well, am I deserving of some sort of fair system in the first place? Or were they just taught that they were like mama's fucking prince and deserves all the dates in the world? I don't know.
I just want to jump in just to say to the question asker, we're not projecting all of this onto you specifically.
Yes.
Sorry. We just inspired a rant.
I wanted to say,
undecided. We're all angry. Hashtag
men. I'm only undecided because like I can, and I feel for this guy because look, like when I was younger, I was one searching away from being in the incel land or the like red pill stuff or whatever. I just probably clicked on like Dan Savage instead by accident. And then that's right. Like, I do feel like I can empathize with a lot of the men and a lot of things I see them say. I don't sympathize with them, but like, I know I can feel what they feeling because I felt it before and thought my prospects were zilch or whatever. And now like I'm known apparently for group fucking. So, you know, I just want to say is like, being this resentful about it. Again, I talk to a lot of women. I have no dude friends. I'm working on it. Jace, one of buddies. Cause like I need more Y chromosomes in my friend pool. It's
sure,
they complain about this because they can read it off you. It's not one thing you said. There's a vibe and an energy of the guy who's just like trying to get a date, or like he's on the date and it's like, I'm trying to get this. It like it's you can read it off of you, right? And like don't let yourself get like hold on to that resentment because they can tell and it's unattractive and it's going to be one of the reasons they skip over or they don't dig the conversation. So like really just like if we go back to the concept about how do we like play in this gamified system, it's you don't play the game. You just be yourself and maybe like try to improve yourself to make yourself a better self. And don't think of this as something you deserve, but just as experiences and connections hopefully we'll get to have. Because if you get resentful, like it's just, it stenches off you. And then they come talk to me about it.
Yeah, to kind of go off of that, our episode with Michael Kay from OkCupid, he talked about the fact that a lot of people really get burned out of the dating apps. And I'm sure that that's true, especially if you're potentially coming at it from a more resentful place. So just like maybe take some time away, really give yourself a break from it, because you're not going to be your best version of self, whatever that may be, if you're really upset about the way that the process is or the gamification or whatever. And so maybe just give yourself even a few months off of it and try to do some self-reflection during that time. Come back to it, you know, with more of a clear head in order to be able to put your best foot forward at that time.
I wanted to bring in just a slightly different flavor of this and just to point out that, like, I don't think men or straight men are the only ones guilty of having this resentment that, I mean, I appreciate, Billy, you mentioning that, like, you can reek of resentment, because what I've noticed, I think the companion phenomenon to that resentment that I see with a lot of women, straight women, women who date guys, is heteropessimism, which is this, oh my God, yeah, it's impossible to find a guy who's worth anything, right? Every single guy is trash. Men are trash. Men on dating apps are trash. It's coming from a different approaching point here, but sometimes I see that as being just as big of an obstacle to finding partnership or whatever it is that you're looking for as the whole like resentment gamification approach to it that we usually see with straight men. I don't know, Emily, I mean, I'm sure you've noticed, because I feel like you listen to more mainstreamy lady podcasts than I do. Have you picked up on that trend?
That women sometimes are just like, there's no good men out there. It's funny because so many of the people, the women who I listen to are either lesbians or they're married already. So that's tough. I mean, but I've heard it with some friends that I have that maybe aren't partnered. Or who haven't been partnered really ever. And that is that question of why is that? And is it just this kind of internal, well, I hate the scene and I hate the men out there and it just is never going to happen for me. So I don't know. It's understandable to get dejected and feel bad and feel like shit if you are constantly getting told no in one way or another. But I think, yeah, a lot of what Billy said really is true. It's like, what's happening underneath there, underneath the surface? What is the deeper question of, like, why isn't it working out for you on both ends?
Just to round this out, I read Blythe Robertson's book, How to Date Men When You Hate Men. And I was hoping that it was full of more practical advice, but it really wasn't. Oh. But I think that's a symptom of the whole thing, right? Literally, it's like, how do you date men when you hate men? And that could probably be a whole other episode. Maybe we'll just leave that topic on the table for now.
I want to bring this back to this particular question here, because I think we've gone off the rails a little bit, because clearly we all have a lot of strong feelings and have experienced a lot of other people online being a lot more negative than this person. And I want to say, based on the way this person wrote their question, they said nothing about the whole 90%, 10% thing. That's all the incel
That's
shit
true.
that Emily brought up from other podcasts. This person is not saying any of that, but they are kind of talking about how, as a man, you are getting a lot of those kinds of messages about, like, oh, you've got to play this numbers game, or you've got to pay for this thing to make it so your account stands out and that women are trying to filter you out. And like, you're getting a lot of those kinds of messages. And I think that, sure, there might be a little bit of truth to it, but I think it's also worth remembering that to, I guess, kind of take some of the intensity out of what everyone's been saying so far and to kind of be like, hey, you know what? Yeah, it takes time and it's not easy. And I also want to bring up the fact that something that really occurred to me recently as I've been getting back into the potential of dating, I haven't actually been on any dates in quite a while, but kind of, you know, getting back on the apps, you know, starting to think about that, is realizing how much decision effort and mental effort doing dating apps takes, right? So there's this thing called decision fatigue, which shows up a lot if you have a job where you have to make a lot of decisions, where you're kind of the one who's responsible for deciding things. Whether that's just deciding things within your own projects or departments, or you're having to write content where you're having to decide what to say, or if it's like you're leading a group of people, either way, that there is like an actual physical limitation on how much of that our brain can do before it needs time to recharge, right? We've talked about this a while ago, but it's been quite a while, so I figure it's worth mentioning. What I noticed is that I was like, why am I having such a hard time being on these dating apps? And what I realized is that it's because as soon as I open them up, I'm just overwhelmed by how much decision-making there is at every step of the process. There's the decision-making of looking at the profiles, trying to read a little bit about them, look at the pictures, try to decide like, what can I gauge about this? Do I think this would be a good match? Trying to figure that out. And then if you do decide yes, then it's like, okay, what message would I send? You know, how could I, what's a good introduction? What's something that's not just like, hey, what's up? I also noticed recently that on OkCupid, when you match with someone, it gives you some suggestions of messages. And one of them is like, what's up? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, OkCupid? That is literally the worst message you could send. Everybody knows this. Why do you make it a one-click button to send that message? This is ridiculous. But anyway, all of that to say, what I noticed is I was just like, I want to say no to everyone because it's easier. Because then I don't have to make all those extra decisions about how to initiate this just because I'm tired of making decisions and doing that. Because I do that a lot at my job. I do that a lot for this podcast and for our other podcast. And there's a lot of that, like figuring stuff out. I do that a lot with scheduling things with my friends or whatever. If you have other partners, it's there too. And so I guess I want to just bring that up to say some of that burnout and frustration with dating apps could be coming from other things like that and not just the relative success rates or the way the system's trying to be gamified or how they're trying to get everyone to spend more money on their apps. You know, like Billy said, you know, don't let capitalism do that to you. I think that's true. And then also, just here's my hot take. I think we have passed the golden age of dating apps. And I think we are going to see people moving away from them because I think we have reached this saturation point where it's like, I think they won't ever go away. I think there still can be a useful tool. They can be a way to branch out of your social circles and where you would meet people. But just compared to before where I felt like there was this heyday, like when, you know, Dedeker and I met each other through OkCupid, you know, through Emily meeting someone through OkCupid and then introducing us. But I think there was a little bit more of that, like it was on the upswing and it hit this like saturation point. And then I think this combination of kind of the depersonalization we've all had with each other because of being really isolated during the pandemic and a lot of fear and extra concerns coming up, along with just like general political and social stress getting a lot higher in recent years, and then economic stress. I think all of these things have combined together that I predict, and I think it's already happening with, like we said at the beginning of the episode, people are so ready to be in person and to have a connection that's not just looking at information on a screen and not just making decisions based on that, that I think this also might be something that's not as hot as it was. And so the question asker says, I think it's becoming increasingly mediated by dating apps. I'm not sure that's true. I don't have any numbers to back this up, but I just predict that we're going to see that way of dating apps is legit. The way people meet each other is not going to just continue to be like, that's the only way you do it. I think meeting in person and finding events for that and people hosting events for that, I think is going to be making a comeback if it's not already.
Yeah, I emcee speed dating events on the side. There are a lot of people at those, man. Like, people do want those in-person connections. I recommend it. Diversify your portfolio if you're going to think about this in such an efficiency terminology.
Right. And like, you might look at someone and be like, I don't know, based on just their pictures and their profile. But if you met that person in person, you might go, damn, okay. Like, I'm kind of interested. Like, or I at least want to know more. You know, there is something very different to that. Like seeing a living, breathing person. Like there's a poly speed dating event that happens here in Seattle that I haven't been to yet, but But I've heard it's like packed. Like so many people are showing up to it that they've been having a really hard time organizing it, actually. So it's like, yeah, there is a lot of desire for that in person. It makes a lot of sense.
Well, thank you for being two resident dudes to weigh in on that.
Thanks,
and then
dude.
Also let the resident ladies get stuff off of our chest as well.
Yeah. Sorry if I went too extreme and intense.
No. It's totally
it's
fine.
All right. We had many different viewpoints. So it was great.
No, Billy, I think a completely appropriate level of intensity. We just know that this question asker is in our Patreon group, and so that's how we know they're a cool and good person.
Oh, you're like, he's a good guy, Bill. You don't know Ben, but like, he's a good dude. It's fine.
Right.
You tone it down. You don't have to treat him like one of those.
There you go.
Yeah. So question asker, I empathize with you and I support you. And I don't think that you're one of those people who's just blaming the system for your problems. You're trying to say, how do I avoid the temptation to fall into that? And I think that's great that you're asking those questions.
Question asker, so, go in the Discord and apologize, by the way. I'm going
to.
Okay. All right. So we have one last question. This one's just a real short one, but I just thought it was interesting. So I wanted to put this in here. And that is, do you know of any stats around how many of the folks who are in the polyam or non-monogamous communities are straight versus how many are queer? Asking as someone who is in a 6-member polycule with some heterosexual presenting relationships within it, but none of the people identify as heterosexual. And basically, the short answer to that is there's not been like a statistically validated study of the general population of everyone who identifies as polyamorous and non-monogamous that has found these numbers that I'm aware of, at least. No one's done that. It's actually a really hard thing to do because getting a generalizable sample of non-monogamous people is actually pretty hard, partly because it's hard to identify what counts as non-monogamy. And then also hard to get respondents. Basically, if you think that maybe 5-ish% of people in the US are some kind of non-monogamous, which is the latest numbers that we've heard, although they might be higher now because that study's from several years ago, that even if you took that, you would have to randomly survey so many people to get enough of a representative sample of that 5% of that larger sample and ask the right questions. It's a challenging thing to do and very expensive, but I can at least give maybe a little bit of an insight. So a few years ago, Dr. Ryan Witherspoon, who's been on this show before, he does some cool studies about non-monogamy. And he had a study that was about basically like discrimination and microaggressions against non-monogamous people and various resiliency factors and how that affects their lives and things like that. And they collected data by, you know, having an internet survey that people could, I think, like it, you know, got advertised various places in different online groups and people could self-select to decide to respond to it. So this is not meant to determine the demographic representation, but we can look at some of the demographics from it and it might give us at least an idea of what polyamorous or non-monogamous people respond to surveys online, which, you know, maybe biases it a little bit, but it could give us some insights. And on that, in this particular study, it looks like around 36% identified as heterosexual, and everyone else was something else, whether that was bisexual, pansexual, gay, lesbian, other, or queer, something else like that. It is also worth noting that of these respondents, only 35.4% identified as male. The rest were either female or non-binary or trans. And so that also could be skewing those results a little, but it does at least give you a sense of like, yeah, there does seem to be a fairly good representation of things besides heterosexuality within that population, just based on who responded to that survey. So again, nothing definitive, but it is at least interesting to look at those numbers and wonder about it. And hopefully someone can do more of an actually generalizable study about it.
And kind of like similar to that swinger question earlier, it's, you find more of like that heteronormativity or like those like opposite sex pairings in like swinger land, as opposed to anywhere that calls itself like poly, play, anything, you know? So if you're looking at first couple, it was like, that's why I was like, if that's a queer couple, if they're a queer couple, they may want to edge towards the poly land, because you're going to find a lot more queer representation in like open queer, as opposed to like say in a swinger community.
That's a great point. Yeah. And this survey included all of those. So yeah, if you had a survey that was just one particular subset of that, one, it makes your data even harder to collect in certain ways, at least, you know, numbers wise. But yeah, that very much could skew it in a very different direction. All right. Thank you, everybody. We really appreciate you submitting your questions. We got a lot of submissions for this episode, and I'm so sorry that we couldn't get to all of them. We tried to do as many as we felt like we could get to in this week's episode, but thank you to everyone who submitted those. We really appreciate you. And thank you to Billy for joining us today in this discussion.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. And Billy, please tell us, you know, where can listeners find more of your stuff? Where can they find your podcast, your stand-up comedy shows, all that stuff?
Yeah, well, I host the Man Whore podcast. That's Man Whore, one word. And you can find that wherever you're listening to Multiamory. I live on Twitter and Instagram. You search me, Billy Procida, P-R-O-C-I-D-A. I pop right up. And if you're in the greater New York City area, I do host a monthly naked comedy show in Brooklyn.
Is the audience naked or the comedians?
The comedians are naked and the first two rows of audience are clothing optional.
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we get quite a bit of participation in that regards. Why the first two rows, Billy? I don't need to. I can see you in the front two rows. I don't know what that guy in the back corner is going to do if I let him take his pants off. So I'm going to where the light still hits.
You got to keep an eye on him. Okay.
Got it.
Absolutely got to. But we do it at this sex positive community space called Hacienda. Where they do, you know, educational shops, performances like this one, and a lot of play parties. So if you are in the New York area and you want to, you maybe heard of Hacienda and you want to check out the space, this is a great way to do it. Our next shows are July 28th and August 18th. And if you are following me on social media, you will or listen to the podcast, you will certainly know how to get tickets.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Billy. And to our listeners, we have our question of the week, which we're going to post on our Instagram stories, which is, what do you think of my hot take? Do you think online dating has reached its peak and is on the way down? Curious to hear what other people think, whether you agree with me or not. Also, if you want to discuss any of this further, the best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is in the episode discussion channel on our Discord server, or you can post about it in our private Facebook group. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Multiamory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Emily Matlack, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.